Well, joining us for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning.
How are you?
Very well, Darren.
Excellent.
Looking
excellent.
Forward to our weekly chat.
As always, highlight of the week for me, KB. Let's start with Leeds, actually, as we usually do, because this international break seems to have gone on for ages. But, I mean, what a game to come back to for Leeds United. Sell-out crowd at Elland Road for Newcastle. It's mouth-watering, KB.
Yeah, it should be absolutely cracking. And the fact that it's live on Sky, and therefore it'll be going out around the world, be a great advert for the new Leeds, if you like, and the resurgence after a very bad start, and everybody calling for everybody's head, and now they're playing, they're showing how good they are. And this will be a really great test. And Newcastle are having a great season, they're top of the league, they're looking as if they're, I mean, early yet, they're looking as if they're in good shape for promotion, and be our toughest challenge. On the other hand, we've taken on Norwich home and away and beaten them both times. And Norwich also fighting for promotion. So that be a good test. Good test. Pity we've got a couple of injuries, but that's what squads are for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a couple of injuries, but it's a good feeling on the pitch for Leeds United at the moment. And off the pitch, there's once again rumours of takeovers that are going around. And one person that's been sort of involved in this is the Italian businessman Adrian Radrizzani. And he posted something on Twitter early on this week, one step closer, but need more time. And obviously people are putting two and two together, coming up with eight.
Well, as I've always said, you don't do business through the media, you do business behind closed doors. Whenever I read somebody looking at this, somebody looking at that, somebody looking at the other, I always take it a pinch of salt. In fact, I will tell you something that I was approached by a lawyer recently who'd been approached by a Chinese consortium interested in taking over Leeds United. And what did I think the price would be and this and that? Could I help in any way? So I said to this lawyer, ask them for proof of funds. That's the first thing you must do. That gets rid of the time wasters. And I was speaking to the lawyer earlier this week, about something else. I said, how are you getting on with your Chinese friends? In other words, they should put up or shut up. They shut up. And the thing is that when I was negotiating the takeover of Leeds United, Gerald Krasner, who had been plagued by that fellow Sainsbury, among other people, on and on and on and on, hadn't got any money. And Krasner said to me, can we have proof of funds? And I said yes, and I provided him direct to the bank. And in 24 hours, Krasner said, somebody said in the discussion, have they got the money? And Krasner said, yes, they have. Boom, first thing. And that shall be the prerequisite. We don't know who this Italian is, if indeed he even exists. We get so many false stories now on Facebook, apparently. Some people just make them up. So the question is, does he exist? Who is he? What is his business? Does he make any money? And how much has he got? Because the TV money, if you get the premiership now, is just... When I think I negotiated the first Sky deal for 50 million quid a year, 1992, now look what it's like. The foreigners are attracted like flies around a jam pot. But certainly three clubs can go up. And as Blackburn, as the Indian owners of Blackburn Rovers found, three clubs come down as well. So there's not a lot to talk about on this because who is the guy? Has he got any money? Blah, blah, blah. And I think you said, before he came here, they said that Cirino has not said very much lately. Well, he doesn't have to, does he? Because the team's doing the talking. I know he's slowly clearing up all the arrears and outstanding court cases and getting them settled. Weston having his last-ditch attempt to continue his libel action was thrown out, as we know, last week. And hopefully we've now got a more settled ship. And in the meantime, it's, as I say, it's the team to do the talking, not the gossip column. So I would suggest we discount any takeover until somebody actually appears with a cheque, or better still, a bank draft.
Quite right, KB.
But not the kind of dodgy bank references that GFH cooked up.
Yeah, let's hope not. Let's move on to England, because in the papers again this week, for a couple of things, Gareth Southgate says he's proven he can handle a job. Old team member of yours, Graham Lassow's part of the panel for the FA to choose the new England manager. And also Wayne Rooney has been in the papers again for all the wrong reasons, KB.
Well, Southgate has, I mean, you know, see what, you know, observe what you hear and see on TV to judge a man. He's quiet, he's understated, he's done a good job of the under-21s, and in the four games he's played, 1-2, drawn 2, he's got on with it. And certainly a more impressive figure than his predecessors. Whether he's good enough in the long term, I don't know. I don't know the man enough. I haven't worked with him or worked near him. But presumably the panel will know, and they will make a judgment, hopefully the right one. He said he'd like the job, so that you've got, if you like, half a deal. You've got a willing seller, so if they've been out of sight, they want a willing buyer. And if they don't give him the job, who else is on the horizon? Proven ability at the highest level. And let me just tell you, from experience, good club managers do not necessarily make good international managers. It's a very different type of job. If you're a club manager, then you're in a routine, you know, Mondays to Saturdays, and sometimes Sundays as well. But if you're an international manager, half the time there isn't any routine. You sort of wander around the country watching matches. You don't get to know the players very much until they're called up in the group. And there aren't many successful club managers become successful England national team managers, as you can see with the various struggles around the rest of the British Isles. Wayne Rooney is... I've always been a supporter of Wayne Rooney, despite his infantile antics when he was younger. He's a good player. I think he'd been paid out of position. And I think it's a question over his fitness at times. But having said that, Southgate kept faith with him, announced him, made him the captain. And how does Rooney repay it? Well, we've seen all the stuff on TV and the newspapers this week. Drunk sozzles with the kind of bad behaviour we don't want to. Okay, he gave his signed shirt to a kid that's dying of cancer. Great, nice gesture, headline catching. But more importantly, it's his behaviour on a regular basis off the pitch. And that's how he must be judged. And he's got to be very careful he doesn't finish up being another Gazza. Certainly, I'm afraid for my part, he would no longer be captain, but he certainly can't expect players to look up to him after his behaviour and his leadership. And I question his commitment to be in the England squad at all. And that's somebody really... And that's one of his supporters saying that. I feel very disappointed and let down. I think he's let the team down. I think he's let his country down. He should be ashamed of himself.
I think a lot of people will agree with you there, KB. Just taking you out of football, there was some sad news that Bradford Bulls rugby league team have gone into administration. And someone just put the question to us this week. Would you ever fancy owning a rugby league team like Bradford Bulls?
No.
Okay.
What's the next question?
Right, okay. Football's your first love. There's not for rugby league, though. That's not somewhere you'd want to go.
My wife actually corrected me just as we were talking before we came on the air.
Yeah.
And I said football was my passion. And she said, I thought I was. I said, well, you know, okay then. Football was my second passion.
Oh, dear.
I think I might not be getting much answer there.
Finally, KB, let's talk about Brexit once again. Is going through. Well, it just seems to be a bit of a mess. What's happening in the government? Leaked reports here and there. What do you make of it all?
Well, this leaked report. When it turns out, it wasn't a report at all. Anything to do with inside government or government. It was an opportunist paper written by a person who worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers. Sorry. You get an awful lot of work from government departments. I think it was ill-informed, written, opportunist piece of work to try and propel somebody into their 10 minutes of fame. I think a load of rubbish. I noticed in the papers this morning there are 33,000 civil servants that run the EC. So this idiot suggests that we need another 30,000 just to negotiate our exit from the EC. What rubbish. I think we have to go back. I think we repeated before. I think we have to go back and look from where we came. The fact of the matter is Cameron and Osborne and Clegg, or Cameron and Clegg, Osborne jumped on the bandwagon, so to speak, as Chancellor. They have proposed in their election campaign that they would have a referendum for the people of England and Britain to decide whether they want to stay in Europe or leave because of all the mutterings that were going on. And they were convinced it was a piece of cake, a walkover, a commitment they'd honour, but no doubt about the result. They all vote to stay. Better the devil you know than the devil you don't. And I believe that Cameron, I mean, when he went to with his much trumpeted and heralding of renegotiating the terms in which we can say, bah, 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 he boasted a lot before he went. I think he got a bloody nose. Partly, I suspect, because he's also telling everybody, don't worry about it, referendum will be a piece of cake, let's get on with it, and bah, bah, bah. And I have little doubt in my own mind that all the anti-Brexit campaigning was engineered at the behest of his government. A Juncker, head of tax dodging, former head of tax dodging Luxembourg, threatening us with this, that and the other, having never done a proper day's work in his life. Mrs. Merkel, IMF, Bank of England, Mr. Carney, and even the bloody American president, Obama warning us. What's it do with him? Saying that we go to the back of the queue. He's just a lame duck president anyway. Hadn't done very much for America. And of course, promptly all the Republicans turned around and said, no, if you leave, you'll be at the front of the queue for negotiations. Because after all, they'd rather deal with one country than 27 countries. I'm drifting a bit, but don't forget, on the free trade side, Canada thought they'd done spent 7 years negotiating a deal. Then it'd be ratified. 1.5 million Walloons, which is a sort of a minority in the Belgium, blocked the whole damn thing. Because in Europe, there are too many separate interests. And they've all got one vote. Estonia's got one vote. United Kingdom's got one vote. Liechtenstein's got one vote. United Kingdom's got one vote. And so it goes on. So, they didn't make a plan B, which is slagging off the current government, but their predecessors didn't make any plans. They were so convinced we were going to win the referendum and stay. Nobody did a what if. So on the 24th of June, when we woke up to find that we were going to leave the EU, pandemonium, consternation, and hadn't done any plans. And since the 24th of June, we've had a change of government. We had a lame duck government until Cameron left. Though, to be fair to Cameron, at least he demonstrated he did have principles, because he said, OK, I've lost, I can't stay, I'm going, I'm leaving government, leaving Parliament. Pity Osborne didn't have the same courage and principles. That's the idiot Clegg, who under his leadership has reduced the Liberal Party from 56 MPs to 8. He's muttering and groaning and trying to do a walk on water and reincarnation. So, you've got a government that's starting from scratch, empty sheet of paper. Where to start? Well, in my opinion, or it is in my opinion, is it very simple? We can't tell what, give away all these demands, tell us what you want, tell us what you want. Well, you don't go in, any businessman knows that you don't go into a, go to in a negotiation telling the world what you're going to ask for, because you're alerting the other side. Which is precisely what, why Cameron got a bloody nose over Brexit. But I think there are some things we can say. We can say we intend to abrogate the fishing agreement so the French and Spanish fishing fleets can keep out of our waters. And that will reinvigorate places like Fleetwood, Whitby and Hull, and probably bring create 700,000 new jobs, revitalise our fishing industry and increase our standard of our balance of payments, because we'll be buying our own fish in pounds instead of buying them in euros or the equivalent of euros from foreigners. And then we'll abrogate the common agricultural policy. Now, I was a farmer for 16 years. Through Brexit, they introduced milk quotas, all that kind of stuff, which damaged greatly our farming industry. That could all be restored. Recouped. The French won't like that. They ship so much of their stuff to us. But we've got stronger position than people realise. Then we just pass a simple law repealing and coming out of the European Court of Justice. And then finally, and let's look at the next misconception, which is deliberately being used to frighten people. What the government is saying is we're going to take back control of our borders. We're not saying we're going to stop immigration. We're saying we're going to control it. We will decide who can come in. And we will decide who can't come in. And for example, all the poor people who are unemployed, have nothing to offer the United Kingdom, won't be welcome. But if people have skills and want to work, they can enhance our economy, then obviously, and there's a vacancy for the job, they will be welcome. That's the difference. We can be choosy, and get the better quality people that we need, as and when we need them. And also, if you think about it, if we cut down on immigration and cut down on scroungers, parasites and hangers-on, then that relieves the pressure on the school, on the education system. Relieves the pressure on the housing situation. And it relieves the pressure on the National Health Service. course. We subsidise the United Europe for far too much and far too long. And Trump has brought one thing to everybody's attention, have you noticed? If you remember NATO, it committed to spending 2% of your GDP on defence. Britain does. France doesn't. They spend barely 1%. Germany doesn't. In fact, there are only five countries that do. And I believe it's Poland, Greece, ourselves, and two of the Baltic states, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania, two of those. The others don't. And Trump has turned around and said, well, we're supposed to be a partnership. Why are the partners being parasites, hangers-on? They're not prepared to pay. America isn't going to. And I think it's a fair comment. And don't forget that the one thing they have abandoned already, Europe, is the European army. What, they're going to build a huge new head office in Brussels and this and that and the other. We don't need a European army. We've got NATO. So I think we're fairly okay outside of Europe, or we will be. Get on with it. But we had the summer holidays, all the civil servants about to take their 6 weeks holiday, sunning themselves abroad, and now they're back to work. But one thing we have to worry about is we're a democracy, we the Brits voted to leave. And the people in Parliament are there to carry out the will of the people, even if they don't personally like it. If they don't like it, they should do what that Conservative MP honourably did, resign from Parliament. Not try and damage, oppose the will of the people, or they've got their comfortable jobs or their tax-free perks in Westminster. So the Parliament has to get behind it. Mr Clegg, who's banging on about his 100 peers, live peers in the House of Lords, if you're not careful, you might find out you'll give the government a bloody good reason to abolish the House of Lords. Food for thought. Well, Lord Sugar and Baroness Brady. Just when I heard the... Anyway, don't underestimate this government. You've got to give them a bit like Monk. You've got to give them time to find their feet, work their way in, and get themselves sorted out, and impose their will on the civil servants. If there are any civil servants who don't agree with Brexit and oppose it, then I suggest they find a job in the private sector. And one last thought, see Mrs. Sturgeon's flexing her muscles again. Funny little woman. I think she'd be asked some straight questions, straight answers. All right, you get independence. You get your way. You've got Scotland now, got you in their independence. Where's your army? Where's your navy? Where's your air force? What were you doing for defence? Where's your central bank? Because you can't expect the Bank of England to prop up the Scottish banks, as they have done. The British government own at least one of the two Scottish banks, bailing them out from their crashing incompetence. And you can also forget your subsidy, which you get from Whitehall every year, which enables you to not bother to charge tuition fees for education. Much better. No prescription charge in Scotland. Great. But independence means independence. So if you go, you have to stand on your own 2 feet. And although Scotch whisky and Scottish smoked salmon are fantastic products, I can't see them keeping the Scottish economy going, can you? And Nicola Sturgeon has already been told by the EC not to expect automatic entry into the EC. And, oh, Mr. Sturgeon, what are you going to use for money? What's your currency going to be? The groat? Or the haggis? Food for thought. There you are, Darren.
KB, we'll catch up with you again next week.
Thank you.